Hello, and welcome to Forefront 360, where we take you all around the topic of the arts and the Christian faith. Today we're doing a very special episode, a very unusual episode. We don't usually take entire episodes and talk about a particular movie, but this time we are, because recently Star Wars The Last Jedi came out, and we've all seen it, and we're all interested in it, and the world is talking about it. So we thought we'd do a podcast and just talk about The Last Jedi and what we thought of it. So if you're interested in listening to us drone on about this for the next hour, strap in into the Millennium Falcon, because you're in for a wild ride. I will say we are going to talk about all the details of the movie on this podcast, so we're going to completely spoil it. So if you haven't seen the movie yet, go see the movie, and on your way home from the theater, listen to this podcast. Okay, with that, I'm Nate Mancini, I'm one of the founders of Forefront, and joining me today I have Rich Christman, Josh Gaston, and a new guest on the Forefront podcast, Cody Schweikert. How are you guys doing?
Doing great. Hey.
Very well.
Excited to be here, yeah.
So, to start off, you all have seen Star Wars The Last Jedi. How many times have you guys seen it so far?
I went twice.
I've seen it three times.
Oh my.
I have also seen it three times.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
There we go.
And I've seen it twice. So you can tell why this movie's doing so well at the box office, because between all of us, we've seen it 10 times. So it's pretty impressive. So what did you guys think of the film? I mean, obviously you went back, so it must have at least been intriguing. But what was your overall reaction? You know, did the film work for you? Did you feel like you were transported to a galaxy far, far away? Let's start with Rich. What did you think about the film in broad strokes?
All right, it's gonna be tough to keep this broad, but I'll do my best. I liked the film, but I say that with many asterisks. I did not enjoy the film nearly as much as I do now when I saw it the first time. It took me a few views through to, I think, appreciate what the director and writers are actually doing with Episode 8. But that being said, I think it's a really meaningful installment in the saga at large. Honestly, what might be its biggest strength and weakness is the fact that I think it feels very different than any other Star Wars movie we've had before. And both plot-wise and in some of the ways we see the characters being portrayed and some of the actions that they take are just very different than what we as Star Wars fans are used to. And me being someone who probably has been watching Star Wars since before I can remember, the movie really caught me off guard when I first saw it. And I think that's the primary reason why I walked out of the theater the first time feeling very let down. But since I've seen it two more times, I've actually enjoyed the movie more each time that I've seen it. And I think it's because once I got over the initial, you know, shock of being wrenched out of my comfort zone, I was able to see the movie for what it is. And I think that what it is a fresh take on the Star Wars that we know and love, which might be able to propel us into a saga, you know, as we continue making more films and seeing more films, that we don't just keep rehashing ourselves over and over. So I guess overall, that is to say that Episode 8 is a surprising movie. It's different than the Star Wars we know and love, but it's a good movie.
Yeah. Cool. So let me go next to Josh. Josh, what did you think of the film? What was your overall reaction?
So actually, I kind of started out in the same place, but having only seen the movie twice, I have not yet got to the point where I really like it that much. I might need to go see it a third time, I guess, is the sense that I'm getting from what Rich is saying. Yeah, no, but
pressure.
I was very disappointed with the plot and the direction they went with. I will say, though, that I walked out of the theater with the feeling that I didn't like that Star Wars movie, but Star Wars will always be fun to watch, and that was a very visually pleasing and a good movie from that perspective. So I think all the actual, you know, cinematography and the fight scenes and all that sort of thing were done really well, with a couple small exceptions that maybe we'll get to later. But I actually felt like I had just watched an episode of a TV show when I left the theater, and I was kind of missing that big overarching, like, oh, what's happening in the galaxy? I felt like we kind of are losing track of here's the big story in these movies, but it's funny because more than ever before, it's kind of focused on like, here's the big bad guys and we're the good guys. Yeah, so I'm not super thrilled with the movie. I have a lot of kind of specific criticisms, and it sounds like I have to go see it a third time for it to really hit me. That's kind of the feeling I'm getting.
Yeah. So how about you, Cody? What did you think of the film?
So let me first off just say that we all went a lot of years without any new Star Wars material. And so I'm just excited that they're making Star Wars films, period. And none of the three new ones that they've made in the last years have been so bad that I've really overall enjoyed them. Just anything they make, I'm just excited about, right? With that being said, I think I saw this movie, The Last Jedi, as two different people. So the child in me that grew up with the prequels and really actually loving the prequels was really actually disappointed. I really relate to what Rich said, and the fact that I walked out of the theater feeling really excited and like, wow, I just saw something really special, but also disappointed with a few of the plot points that I won't get into details now, but just things that I was really anticipating finding out and learning that apparently just didn't matter to this story. And that did feel disappointing, because whereas The Force Awakens really felt like a safe movie in that it was nostalgic and it was safe in the sense that it just did kind of what I was expecting it to do. And Rian Johnson in this film took a lot more chances. The child in me was disappointed, and the artist in me was absolutely thrilled and loved it. So, and as I've seen it a few times, like Rich said, I think that artist side is really taking over and really appreciating the story, the complexity, the complexity of relationships, the confusion, the unexpectedness. You know, people were dying and I wasn't expecting it. And I love being surprised by a movie. And I love being challenged. The fact that my expectations weren't fulfilled isn't necessarily a bad thing to me. So as I think about what I wanted in the moment, I was disappointed. But as I think about where the direction that this story is heading in the long term, I'm really excited and appreciative.
Yeah. So I'm largely in agreement with that. I think that this was a pretty bold film, pretty risky film. And I think it was a necessary film for the Star Wars saga, because I think we can agree that as we look back at the recent Star Wars films, that they're all kind of echoing each other, and they're all kind of calling back to each other in some pretty clear ways. Not least the fact that both The Force Awakens and Rogue One were about destroying Death Star-like weapons. So it's really exciting to me to walk into The Last Jedi and just be surprised, period. Like, just to have a Star Wars movie that just surprises me. Stuff happened that I did not expect at all, that I thought ultimately were really cool. So I really enjoyed the film. I think it's a good movie. It's artistically, I think it's a good movie. I do think it has flaws. I think it could have benefited from a little bit better editing. There are a lot of things in it that I think could have been streamlined to make it not only shorter, but also better. And I think that Rian Johnson could have held back a little bit on shot blocking all of J.J. Abrams' plot lines. There are a couple things he could have continued rather than just ignoring or blocking things that J.J. had started with The Force Awakens. But overall, I'm grateful to The Last Jedi, because I think when it's over, I say, wow, that was a Star Wars movie that I didn't expect.
Yeah, I can echo that entirely. I think that when I saw it, a bunch of family members that hadn't seen it yet, the first time I went, they said, without giving away any spoilers, just give me like a one-word response, how was it? And the response that I gave them after I saw it the first time was, very unexpected.
Yeah.
So I can really echo what you were saying there.
And that's something you would not have said coming out of The Force Awakens or Rogue One, probably.
No, not at all.
So a big part of The Last Jedi is the character of Luke Skywalker. A big part of the film, but also a big part of kind of the conversation around the film, because anybody who's seen Star Wars knows and loves the original trilogy, loves the character of Luke Skywalker. And now finally, we get Luke in a Star Wars movie again. We had him in The Force Awakens for a split second, and he didn't have any lines. So now he's in a Star Wars movie again and has lines. He actually is a significant character in The Last Jedi. So I want to talk about that. What do you guys think of the character of Luke in The Last Jedi? What did you think of kind of his mindset and what he's doing on this island and where he's at and what he does in the film? Did you like the choices that Rian Johnson made with the character, or did you feel that it was, I don't know, maybe a betrayal of the character you loved? What did you think about that?
I'll sound off if you don't mind. I had a very specific image of who I wanted Jedi Master Luke Skywalker to be. And that's the character I believed I was getting going into the movie. And so I think that one of my biggest initial disappointments, like when I walked away disappointed, was that Luke was not this person I wanted him to be, which was this very wise and extremely powerful Jedi Master, you know, almost a mixture of like Qui-Gon Jinn and Yoda is kind of what I wanted to see. And I was expecting him to be almost a victorious character who maybe even had a plan while he was sitting on this faraway island, on this faraway planet, that, you know, when Rey found him, he would unravel his great plan to bring back, you know, the old Republic. And that was, obviously that's the opposite of what we get. And I was really disappointed by that at first. But then over time, I actually have come to really appreciate the character that Rian Johnson gives us as Luke. And I actually, now I really like the character. And I like the pain that he is under and how that's affected his character. And we get this sense that he's been through so much and there's so much of a, like an emotional and spiritual weight upon his shoulders. And I think that Mark Hamill acted that very well. And I've been a Mark Hamill fan for a while, you know, outside of even Star Wars. And I think The Last Jedi is one of, if not his best acting that we've seen.
Yeah. Man, he knocked it out of the park. I mean, he was way better in this than in, say, A New Hope.
Oh, yeah. And his, especially the emotional depth in his facial expressions is what really got it for me. But anyway, I think that my one criticism that I will make about The Last Jedi's Luke is, even though I am a fan of the character, I wish very much that Johnson had given us more about Luke's past to make how far Luke has fallen from faith a little bit more believable.
Yeah.
Because I am totally down with this character with this mighty Jedi Master who has fallen very far and has lost faith in the Jedi and even in the Republic. And even, you know, Luke says in the movie, he's just come to this island to die. And I'm down for that, and I believe in that character. But what we're given in the movie, which is simply, you know, Ben Solo turning to the dark and destroying the temple, the Luke that I know is not weak enough to have, even though that's a catastrophic event, I think that the Luke that I know would have to go through much deeper, more prolonged pain to fall to the place that he's fallen to. And so again, I like the Luke that we're given. I just wish that we had a little bit more to place him in that spot.
Yeah, if I can echo that, Rich, I agree 100%. At first, I was a little put off the way he tossed the lightsaber. I was like, you know, this is just kind of a, almost like, what do you call it? Like, the non-scary equivalent of a jump scare, just like, hey, you didn't expect this, so we did it. And I was kind of annoyed by that.
I agree with that completely.
That lasted for a little while, and I was like, you know, didn't really care to see Luke on screen, which I felt really bad, really bad thinking that. But yeah, I just struggled with the fact that he, after one big failure like that, would just run off and hide. His character was always brash, you know, made a lot of poor decisions and struggled internally a lot. But I never thought that Luke would just kind of, like you said, give up, and especially in terms of like the Republic and all that. And I think that's one of the other weaknesses that I've seen in the Star Wars movies is we don't get a good idea of like where the First Order is really coming from, what the state of the Republic was prior to the Starkiller base attack and all that sort of thing. So it's hard to know, like, did Luke think that he was leaving a peaceful galaxy and he had done something wrong and so he was just kind of exiling himself, but no one else would really have to pay the price of that? I can only imagine that that's what the explanation is, but we don't exactly get enough information to know that one way or another.
Right.
Yeah. Cody, what did you think about Luke?
So I totally agree with our introduction to Luke in this movie. I see that this moment that JJ sets up at the end of Force Awakens is just this epic moment where Rey comes, and I'm just so excited to see like what Luke is going to do. And to see him throw the lightsaber over his shoulder like that was just like, that was, yeah, extremely annoying for me. but aside from that nitpicking, I think that, you know, losing Ben Solo to the dark side and disappointing his sister and seeing that family fall apart, to me, that was severe enough for me to see Luke run away like that, especially when I remember really Luke is this kind of this guy who was trained as a Jedi, but he was really old, right? And he didn't complete his training, and then he did, and he was always pretty, like we said, brash and immature. And so I think that I wasn't too surprised to see him where he was. And at the same time, I really feel like I wanted to see this like super powerful Jedi master who was going to come save the day. But two things helped me, I think. Yoda showing up and seeing those two together again really helped me like understand and respect where Luke was as a character in this movie, like still developing, still broken, still got some streaks of immaturity. But again, like I was so excited to see Luke Skywalker come back and just like wreak havoc on the bad guys. And I didn't get to see that until the very last scene, of course, with this whole force projection thing. And that to me redeemed him totally. And that was totally worth it for me. And so I'm okay with what they did with Luke.
Yeah, can I echo you there? I think that all of the issues that I had with Luke's character throughout watching the movie were resolved for me in that final scene that we see with him. And the more times that I've seen the movie, the more that has been cemented for me. I think that the Luke that I wanted to see is the Luke that we see, I think. Mm-hmm. But only when we see who he is. Like, if we allow ourselves to erase the Luke we see tossing Anakin's lightsaber and et cetera, and and we look at the Luke that we see in the end facing down Kylo Ren and truly caring for his sister and, you know, stuff like that, I think that that is the Luke that we've been waiting for and the Luke that we are given in the end.
Yeah, that's such a great sequence.
Oh, yeah. And I truly did not see the force projection coming. I know some people say that they saw it coming, but I did not at all.
Yeah.
Me neither.
Yeah, I think one of the really cool things about that ending for Luke is that it's this incredible like pacifist victory in contrast to Kylo Ren being like, fire everything you have, and just like being all unhinged like he always is. And Luke's just there, cool, calm, and collected, you know, brushing the imaginary dust and salt off of his cloak. You know,
salt.
It's just like,
yeah.
And then the fact that he's there with a lightsaber, ostensibly fighting the battle for the rebellion, and yet he's not actually fighting a battle. He's not actually fighting. You know, he never actually attacks Kylo at all.
Yeah, he's just dodging the whole time.
He's just dodging. He's not even there. So it's just really, I think it's a really cool kind of pacifist victory. And I think it shows how much Luke has learned from Yoda that, you know, the Jedi are not to use the Force for aggression. So that it's kind of such a great way of wrapping up the character.
Yeah, in the midst of us seeing them kind of like, and moments looks like they're throwing away everything we knew about the Force, for them to finish with that moment of classic Jedi teaching, you know, it's self-defense, it's we're the defenders of peace rather than aggression. I really love that respect that they showed in that way to the old traditions of the Force. But.
Yeah, it brings it full circle really nicely. You know, you get a character that struggled a lot, kind of demonstrating that even if he never got trained as much as maybe he wanted to or we wanted him to, he still kind of attained that level of self-discipline and self-control enough that he can, you know, face off his opponent who really kind of cast him out of the world and maintain that calm and not even try and do anything other than distract him, you know?
I think that there's two very specific beauties to that whole sequence. And I think that, which are honestly, you know, some of my favorite gems in the movie. And I think the first is the very stark juxtaposition. Well, everyone's so interested in the juxtaposition between Rey and Kylo Ren. You know, there's all these posters about them, you know, back to back, the blue and the red and et cetera. But I think the more beautiful juxtaposition is Luke and Kylo Ren in that scene, because like we're talking about, we have Luke as this pacifist figure and Kylo Ren is just a ball of rage in that scene. In the way that he, both in the way that he delivers his lines, the lines that he says, you know, when Luke says that he won't be the last Jedi and Kylo Ren kind of, you know, like spits out, well, I'll destroy her too. I'll destroy all of it. You know, he's just this, he doesn't even care what Luke says. He just wants to destroy because he's just so angry. And then when he physically attacks Luke, it's in this like clumsy, you know, thrust forward of all of his, you know, his physical body, his weight, his lightsaber. And I think that what we see from him is just this, like this sort of uncalculated, uncool expression of just like angst and anger and hate. And Luke, on the other hand, is this very calm, collected character who like both physically finesses him and mentally and spiritually finesses him also.
Yeah, can we talk about like Adam Driver and Kylo Ren too? Because I think that's my favorite character and portrayal, especially those moments where he's just completely unhinged. And it's funny because people really didn't like Kylo Ren in The Force Awakens. They're like, oh, you know, he's such a child. He's like acting like too much of a goober. But I love that we've still got a character in a way that's like Luke, who doesn't really know what's going on and just wants to make things happen his own way.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exciting to finally have a villain who's on the young side and trying to figure things out. So we kind of have all these heroes, you know, we have Finn and Rey and Poe, and they're all trying to kind of figure out how to do things and their place in the world. And then we've also got Kylo Ren, who's like the big bad villain, but he's also really young and trying to figure out his place in the world. And so it's kind of exciting, I think, to have all those heroes paired with a young villain where, hey, nobody really knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
But everyone has an idea of what they want to be going on, and that's what really makes it fun.
Yeah. So let's talk about the plot line that Rey and Kylo share. Obviously, Rey spends a lot of time on Octo with Luke, being sort of trained, sort of not. And then she goes off to see Kylo. And in the meantime, of course, she's been force timing with Kylo. And, and then she and Kylo meet up with the big bad evil guy Snoke, who we don't learn anything about, and they kill Snoke and they fight together. They tear apart a lightsaber and then they part ways again and Kylo's mad. So what did you think about the Rey, Kylo, and partially Snoke plot line? How did that work for you? Did you like the force timing between Rey and Kylo? Did you like the confrontation with Snoke? Did you like how the film ended between Rey and Kylo? How did that work for you guys?
Snoke's death is my favorite scene in the movie. So I think that, as another asterisk on top of that, I have a huge issue, especially being I'm a big prequel fan, so I care a lot about the continuity. And I do have a huge issue with the fact that Snoke existed in the first place, but I don't consider that a Last Jedi issue. That's just a new trilogy issue, which we can talk about later if you want to. But talking about that specific dynamic and sequence, the scene with Snoke's unexpected death and the whole following scene, which is of course visually awesome, and then also the interaction between Ben and Rey when he, you know, we get this moment where we think that maybe Ben has turned to the light, and then we find out that he hasn't. He's really just greedy and wants to let the past die and ascend the ladder or whatever. That emotional roller coaster that we go through, I think that is the best part of the movie. I loved it. And I think that moment where Ben was able to kill Snoke, I think A, gave us a lot of depth to the character of Ben. I think that it added a lot to him, like the ability that we've seen him fail many times before, and now we've seen him have a tremendous and unexpected success. I was completely blown away by that in the theater, and I think that that was one of the most artistic moments of Johnson's directing, to throw in this thing that would have been completely impossible in the Star Warses that we know before. Like, no one could have unexpectedly killed Emperor Palpatine.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that was just very well done.
Yeah.
Yeah, for me, a quick comment on that. The Snoke scene also, where he dies, is at once my favorite and maybe my least favorite moment of the movie, just because I still, I was so unexpected, and I loved that, and it kind of, like, made me respect Kylo a little more. But I was wondering, like, so Snoke can see what he's doing, but couldn't detect his intention. And for me, that was like confusing, because I thought that I was really made to believe that Snoke was extremely powerful. And so I was a little confused by that, but at the same time excited, because maybe I was underestimating him the whole time. And, you know, Snoke's overconfidence is his weakness or something like that. So that's really cool. But as far as, Nate, what you said about the dynamics between Kylo and Rey, I was surprised by it because, you know, we leave The Force Awakens really seeing Rey and Finn having, you know, they're the primary connection. And so you see them separated for most of the film, and Rey and Ren have this Force timing thing, which to me felt like too millennial, I don't know. But at the same time, it was like, I didn't totally hate that. That was fine. But I'm really intrigued. I did not see this story becoming so much about Kylo Ren, and to actually have depth to his character, when most of the villains to this point in the Star Wars stories have been a little more one-dimensional, is really exciting. So I don't know who's going to give. I was kind of hoping Rey would turn to the dark side in this movie, to be honest. I was hoping for a crazy, risky move like that. But, I'm excited. I think it's a rich exchange that they have going on, and I don't know what to expect, and that's the most fun part of it for me.
Yeah. I think, you know, if we're honest, our eyes were probably pretty glued to the screen during the Rey-Kylo interactions throughout the film. I mean, I know for me it was one of the most engrossing parts of the movie. It just felt weighty, like it had importance to it in ways that the kind of Poe Holdo plot line and the Finn Rose plot line kind of felt like, okay, you know, there's stuff going on, and that's fun, but like it felt like the Rey Kylo interactions and what was going on between Rey and Luke and all that was like the meat of the plot, and that was like where I wanted to be. So, like, I wanted those scenes to continue because they were so interesting and they were so intriguing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. At first, I wasn't sure if I liked the Force connection between Kylo Ren and Rey, but once it was kind of explained that Snoke was facilitating that a little bit, it made it easier for me to believe, and that kind of set that aside. I think, like you were saying, Cody, like I didn't hate it either, but I really did like kind of seeing Rey kind of edge toward the dark side. Luke makes comments about you went, you know, right for the dark side. I don't know mm-hmm. if he said dark side, but, you know, right for the darkness. Because she doesn't really know all the kind of history and background to the Force, presumably. Like, she has maybe had a little bit of, you know, conversation with people, but doesn't quite understand much of it, except for, interestingly enough, what Kylo tells her, and he obviously has his own ends that he's trying to pull her toward. So yeah, I really like the character development, and I said earlier that the movie felt a little bit like a TV show episode to me, and the reason for that, I think, is becoming more clear to me as we talk. The really interesting story only really happens between these two characters. As much as I was interested to see Luke, he doesn't have that much happen to his character. It's more like, you know, a slight realignment that I think Rey provokes in him.
He never leaves his island.
Right. Yeah. He just, it's like when you go to find the old master and he's grumpy and he doesn't want to come, and then eventually he does come along to fight. He never actually does come along to fight.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
which is great, which is a good twist, and I like that. But yeah, so like, you know, the Holdo and Poe Dameron thing, I didn't like at all. And then the whole kind of adventure to the casino world felt like a huge waste of time. I don't like Rose's character very much. And so it felt like kind of they said, hey, we've got to make sure that we get Rey and Ben on screen, and we've got to put the story together, but we can't just have it be that. So like, what else can we do? Okay, here, have these other characters do some things. So that was the feeling that I got. And it's not, you know, it's not fair to the actors, and there is some good writing in there and some good stuff happens, but I agree with what you guys are saying about how much you like this part, but it almost throws into such stark comparison everything else in the movie that it makes everything else feel kind of almost pointless. Because I love the character of Rey, and I love Kylo Ren for how complex he is, and I just want to see more of them.
Yeah. So before we jump in to talk about like the Finn Rose plotline and the Poe Holdo plotline, I wanna spend a minute talking about the Rey's parentage reveal that we got in The Last Jedi. And to kind of slide into this, I'll mention a meme that I saw. Adam Driver stars in a film called Patterson, where he is a poet. And so there's this great meme where there's a picture of Adam Driver in the movie Patterson writing poetry. And then written on the photo, it says, "You come from nothing. You are nothing, but not to me." Love poem. It's like, yeah, that's basically Kylo's poetry. So in the film, Kylo basically reveals to Rey what she's ostensibly known, that her parents are nobodies, and that she, quote, comes from nothing. So what do you guys think about that? Was that expected to you? Was that unexpected? Do you believe Kylo? Do you like the decision that Rian Johnson made taking Rey in that direction?
I just say really quick, I don't believe Kylo, and that's kind of, I won't say more than that. I just think that he was trying to persuade her, and that's it. I feel like we'll find out more later.
So you think there's somebody?
I think so. At least one parent. You know, kind of like an Anakin situation potentially, but...
Well, wait. Can I interject? As a massive prequel fan who will always defend the prequels, if we, you know our Star Wars lore, unless Johnson is taking it upon himself to completely change what like we know in Star Wars canon to be true, the Force, like the reason why Anakin came from nothing is because he was the chosen one who was created through Force experimentation by Darth Plagueis. So the fact that, like, the idea that Rey could have literally no one and just is like this girl who was born in the desert and is somehow tremendously Force sensitive, like, I don't buy that as a Star Wars fan. So and especially seeing that J.J. Abrams is taking the helm of Episode 9, I would not be surprised if we find out that there is some connection, even if that connection isn't that Rey is, you know, a Skywalker or a Solo or what have you. I think that there will be some connection. I think there needs to be, or else we have a massive Star Wars plot hole. And I also take criticism to the fact that we see this, what people are calling the democratization of the Force, where in the end of the movie, we see the little boy on, you know, in Canto Bight who has the Force. Where does this boy come from? So that's my two cents.
Rich, wow. Rich, let me ask you, could you explain why there's a Star Wars plot hole if Rey is actually from... Now, when we say she's a nobody, we mean she was born of humans, right? But not of Force-sensitive parents, just kind of nobody parents, drunks, right? So why is that a plot hole?
Well, yeah,
I would disagree with that.
Okay. Well,
Rich, were you
more
talking to what I was saying with being like, oh, maybe she's only got one parent? That was kind of a throwaway for me. I wasn't thinking that was a high possibility.
No, I'm just saying that, like, with at least my understanding of it, is the fact that once George Lucas brought in the midichlorian idea, the Force is like a tangible sort of thing which is passed down like biologically. And the reason why in episode one, Qui-Gon is so fixated on this boy that he finds on Tatooine is because Anakin has a midichlorian count that's higher than any life form that the Jedi have ever encountered. And later in episode three, we hear from Palpatine that, you know, his master was doing, you know, was able to create life through the Force. And we sort of insinuate that this life that was created is the life Palpatine has been seeking, which is the chosen one who would ultimately become Darth Vader. And I think that if we look at, you know, if we sort of buy into that, and this, if we buy into the midichlorians, which many people have been critical of, the idea that there are just sort of like children strewn throughout the galaxy who are born with not only Force sensitivity, but the same level of like immense Force sensitivity that Anakin had, I think that just kind of takes away the uniqueness of the Chosen One plotline.
Okay.
I mean, unless they go and say, hey, well, you know, the prophecy wasn't right or something like that. You know, like you could kind of try and rewrite it from that perspective.
Well, I think they're going to ignore the prequels as much as possible. we don't get many references to the prequels in this kind of era of Star Wars movies. But I think even if you do go back to the prequels, you see that these little kids are being taken from all over the place to be trained as Jedi. So it's not like they all have to be part of some particular lineage. I mean, even in the prequels, Jedi are coming from all over the place. Now, you know, maybe their parents had some kind of Force sensitivity or whatever. But if you keep going back and back and back and back, it almost becomes meaningless, right? I mean, I think the point is that Rey doesn't have to be a Skywalker or a Solo or a Kenobi. She could have come from anywhere, from anyone. And that's what I think this movie is saying. And I think if you say that's not the case, you run into some weird things. For instance, for one thing, we know JJ and Ryan agreed about Rey's parentage. We've heard that from reliable sources. So it's not like JJ was setting up something that Ryan completely changed. So I think we have to assume that what The Last Jedi tells us is the same thing that The Force Awakens is telling us.
But potentially they're in cahoots to keep us distracted too. You know, like that could be one of the way they agreed was to say, hey, I'll set it up as if it's this big thing. You can actually take a bunch of my plot lines and make it seem like you're throwing them all out. And then we'll kind of keep this one because people will be really surprised if it comes back. That's kind of what I'm guessing.
Based on what we know about the script writing process, that's not the case. Basically, JJ and Ryan had one meeting where JJ's like, here's the Force Awakens script, and then Ryan just wrote it. Like, JJ was not involved at all in the creation of The Last Jedi. No notes were passed on to Ryan to say, like, do this or do that. Like, he literally had no, there was no framework, there were no limitations, but he and JJ independently came to the same conclusion about Rey's parents. At least that's what we've heard from sources.
That's interesting. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah,
me neither. So I haven't really like read up on external stuff at all.
Ooh. Yeah, and then the other thing is that Rey, clearly what The Last Jedi sets up is that Rey's biggest fear is that she is alone and that she has no connection, right? So like when Luke goes into the cave in The Empire Strikes Back, he sees himself in Darth Vader, like his biggest fear is that he's going to turn to the dark side. And so he sees that in the cave. Well, when Rey goes into her cave on Octo, She sees just herself forever and ever and ever. She has no connection, no one but herself to turn to. And that's her biggest fear. But that's like the hardest thing that she has to hear. So I think that the film is setting up that like Rey has to deal with the fact that she doesn't have a parent to turn to, that like she looked for it in Han, she looked for it in Luke. She doesn't have parents to turn to. Instead, she has to rely on what she's learned and rely on the friends that she's met throughout this journey, that she can't keep looking for her parent to give her meaning. I think that's what the film's trying to say. And I think if you change it, it kind of ruins the point of the movie, right?
I think that there is a great discussion. I can echo you. I think that there's a great discussion being had about that. And I'm sort of happy with whatever way the plot seems to go. But I think that the way back in the beginning when you asked how I felt about the movie, and I said this movie was so different than what we've been used to seeing in Star Wars. One of those things that I think is a theme that Star Wars has sort of just in, at least in my experience of it, what Star Wars has sort of been built upon is this idea of, interestingly, I think, in light of what you just said, the following through of a story of a special lineage being the, how, Luke, if we look at the original trilogy, Luke, so much of the intrigue of the original trilogy is the idea that Luke is, he appears to be this farm boy, who has no future. But in reality, he's the son of a great Jedi from the past who we find out is the great Sith of the present. And I think that something that we're so, almost comically used to in Star Wars is that it's, the story is the saga of this special family. And so I think that even though what Nate, I think what you're saying is accurate and true, I think that that may be one of the things that has shaken so many viewers is the idea that Johnson almost seemingly single-handedly has removed the foundation of the Star Wars plotline and said actually it's not about the Skywalkers at all. They're just one Force-sensitive family in this great history of Force-sensitive families. And here's another one, And so I think that sort of people that are so loyal to the originals feel sort of gypped in the way that they're oh, well, what do you mean? This story's about the Skywalkers and now they're all gone,
Yeah.
So
I would say
interesting.
Yeah. That, this is to me the most interesting discussion to have about this whole movie and this whole story, because I think that, I think many of us fans spent a ton of time between The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi trying to figure out who her parents were going to be. How does this fit into this great story about a powerful family? And that's why this film made me so uncomfortable, because I just sensed they were telling me to let it die, kill it. We're going in a new direction. And even in The Force Awakens, Nate, what you say about Maz Kanata has this line where she says something to the effect of, Rey, you need to, forget about your parents and move on. There's a bright future ahead of you, but you got to let go of the past.
Yeah, the belonging you seek really, is not behind you, it is ahead.
Yeah, yeah, and to me, that's the direct, both directors saying, okay, we need to move on. That was a great story, but there's so much more to explore and to be had. And that does make me uncomfortable as a lover of the prequels and the original trilogy and all that. But I'm also excited about what they can do, expanding the universe. And I'm still not totally convinced that they're breaking rules of the prequels. That would really upset me, because people can make fun of the prequels, but you can't break those rules. And so to me, I think they're doing it in a good way. I don't think they're breaking any rules. And I think they're thinking long-term. Because Nate, I think you told me this, but Rian Johnson has got his own trilogy to direct after this. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah. Disney was super happy with everything that Rian did on The Last Jedi. I mean, all the way through, Disney's been just showering Ryan with praise. They have loved this process working with him. So they trusted him so much that they've given him an entirely new Star Wars trilogy, completely disconnected from 7, 8, and 9, to just do whatever he wants with. So he's literally working on writing that now. And he has no direction. He's given free rein on this. So that's going to be really interesting, because we've got JJ coming back for 9, and then Ryan's going to have this other trilogy that's just new and different. And I think The Last Jedi shows that that's what he wants to do. He wants to move on to new and different things and expand the universe.
See, I know somebody else already kind of said this, but that terrifies me, to be honest, because I'm a huge, you know, fan. And like Cody said earlier, like, I will gladly see every Star Wars movie that comes out. Like, you know, I've seen every episode of the Clone Wars animated show and the Star Wars Rebels show. Like, I love Star Wars material, but the idea that there would, you know, that we're moving towards like a completely disconnected, you know, future trilogy, which is already being written before we even know how this trilogy is going to close. Like, it sort of makes me feel like, I don't know, like, I don't know if I'm a fan of the idea of getting away. I mean, I feel like Star Wars was always about the characters, and I feel like now we're getting away from the characters and just going into this vast universe. So I feel like Star Wars to our children is going to be more of just a setting than like a story about specific characters and specific people.
Yeah, that's a really interesting thought.
That's true, if they don't come up with new compelling characters. And that's what they're, I think, trying to do so desperately with, you know, Kylo Ren is still, you know, in the family, but his name's not Skywalker, you know. So I think they're taking baby steps. And you know, if Rian Johnson can come up with compelling characters in this new setting, then I think it's a more sustainable direction for the long term. But scary.
Yeah, there's a lot of darkness out there in space, so hopefully he will bring some light. So
I remember reading about all these fanboys being so disappointed when Johnson like officially said that his new trilogy would not be taking place during the Old Republic.
Right.
And all these people were like, "No." which is very funny. Yeah.
So briefly, I want to touch on the other plot lines we had going on in the film. We had Finn and Rose doing their thing to Canto Bight. We had Poe and Admiral Holdo duking it out on their ship. Again, I want to keep this brief, but what were your basic thoughts on these other plot lines? I mean, I think we kind of said, yeah, they were weaker than the Rey Kylo plot line, but overall, did you like them, hate them? What did you think of the addition of Rose and Holdo? How did all that work for you?
It hurt me inside. I really felt uncomfortable with a lot of that stuff. For a couple of things, like you said briefly, I'll just try and go over quickly. The first one is, I never saw Poe Dameron as a knucklehead until they made him a knucklehead so they could cut him down with a strong female character. But I feel like from a feminist perspective, I would be pretty disappointed with Admiral Holdo, other than the fact that she gets to cut down this, you know, whippersnapper male character who people liked in the previous movie. She doesn't communicate well. She's slow to make the move to attack the enemy with the ship using the hyperdrive, which when I talked about some of the things I loved in the movie earlier, visually, that was amazing. I love that scene so much. And I love the way the theater just goes quiet too. Like, everyone kind of pauses and just admires it. So I really love that. And I love that she facilitated that. But something that I think could have happened instead would be like, why not Admiral Ackbar? You know, like, he got killed off screen, and I think he would have added a lot of emotional weight to a kind of sacrificial attack like that. But yeah, so I didn't see the need for that to happen to Poe. He could have been the trap. Now there would have been some excellent meme quality. meme quality footage. Oh, yeah. Right there.
That would, we can't repel memes of that magnitude.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I didn't see the need for Poe to be cut down like that, and because of that, I didn't like Haldo's character at all. and then quickly on Rose and Finn. I really struggled to see how Rose got to be a part of the story. You know, she goes from being kind of like a cleaning person to then piloting these little skipper attack craft in what's really, as far as the Rebellion knows, their actual last chance, right? Like, this is all we've got. Okay, let's send the cleaning lady to pilot a ship. But the other thing I didn't like was how she turns around and then comes back faster than Finn can get close to the cannon. You know, like, where does she come from if everyone had been heading back and he was going at full speed? I'll just stop because I have so many nitpicks with all those things. but yeah, just to say, like, I was pretty disappointed with a lot of what went on there. And I felt like a lot of it wasn't necessary, and that's why I didn't like it. I'm okay with people saying things that I disagree with, but I feel like there needs to be a reason, and it didn't feel like there was a reason for a lot of it.
Yeah, no, I'm a fan of Rose, and I think that I like that character. I do think that the Canto Bite sequence was too long and felt like a waste of time. So mm-hmm. that I'm for.
Yeah.
And I think the introduction of the character of DJ, while entertaining, was not necessary and added kind of what was being called before like a TV show like feel. You know, like mm-hmm. I got that through that whole sequence. But that aside, I like the character of Rose. Right, right. I like the character of Rose because I think that a lot of people were getting this romantic vibe from Finn and Rey in The Force Awakens. And I think that Rose sort of resets that. And I think that Rey is not really concerned with a romance with Finn. And I think that if she were to go down that road, in like episode 9, I think that would be really disappointing and would take a lot from her character, especially as, you know, the first like true female lead in Star Wars. She doesn't need to find a romantic partner to close her story. And I think that the other thing that Rose sort of gives us is she gives us, I guess let's put it this way. There's a lot of different tiers of characters in the story where we have people as involved and as connected as, say, Ben Solo, all the way down to someone like Rose, who really, she's part of the Resistance and she's part of this galaxy, but the person that she idolizes isn't Luke Skywalker or Leia or Poe, it's Finn, who, without Rose, Finn is the lowest on the totem pole. So I think that the idea, like, I think that what Rose kind of gives for us is this kind of boots on the ground perspective into mm-hmm. what's going on in the Resistance. And I also think that she was just like, kind of like a fun and cute character. Like, I enjoyed having her in the movie. And I think that her character can and should be expanded upon. I think that if she had died in the end of the movie, that would have been a shame because her character was really not developed at all. Yeah, but I do think it was interesting that I was nervous at first when I saw her because when we went into the Canto Bite scene, I was afraid that they had introduced her character entirely to have her sort of speak out against capitalism in that scene.
Oh, yeah.
Right. And this might be like my, you know, just my way that I saw it or whatever, but I did sort of see the Canto Bite sequence as either Johnson or Disney or someone just trying to sort of worm in a little bit of anti-capitalist sentiment into the movie, which sort of annoyed me because it made me feel like, you know, Star Wars has always been above our petty, like contemporary discussions. So I hope that they don't allow like contemporary issues to openly seep into Star Wars. Like obviously contemporary issues are being discussed in, you know, the philosophical themes of the story at large, but
right.
Anyway,
the more abstract you keep it, the longer it can last and the longer it can have meaning for other generations.
Right. And I don't like, I mean, regardless of anyone's political opinions, I think it's kind of a cheap shot to say like, oh, well the good guys oppose the making of money and the bad guys are about making money. Yeah, long story short, I like the Finn and Rose dynamic, and I like Rose as a character. I like that we, even though it was pretty shallow, I like her connection to the sacrifice of the bomber in the opening sequence with the dreadnought. Mm-hmm. I thought that was pretty cool.
I think one missed opportunity in the casino scene was to have, instead of creatures, to have pod racing on that little racetrack. When I saw the rumble on like the in the glass or whatever it was, I was like, oh, we're going to see pod racers. Like, they brought them back. And then it's these random creatures that are fine, but like, I felt like that was a missed opportunity. What do you guys think about that? Did anyone else think it could be pod racers?
You know me, any connections to the previous films, I'm going to go buck for. But I think that Nate is right, that I think that the directors are trying very hard to like not give us as much of those hails to the past.
Right.
But to be honest though, the scene that we did get, especially with John Williams' music over the top of it, you know, when Finn and Rose are riding the creatures like through the, you know, and they're being chased by the police, whatever, that scene felt very much like a Harry Potter scene to me.
Yeah, you're
right. I don't know if anyone got that vibe, but it felt like very much like Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban to me.
Yeah.
But that is what it is.
So, Cody, I want to let you weigh in here. What did you think about the Finn Rose plotline and the Poe Holdo plotline?
So, Finn Rose, quick thoughts. Overall, I like Rose as a character. I think she's a great actress, and I just got like Rogue One vibes from her, like boots on the ground. I love the way you put that, Rich. I think that really humanized the struggle of the resistance. For me, I like that. At the same time, it got really political and weird on Canto Bight, like explicitly political, and that just felt like, I don't know, it just felt like I wasn't in a galaxy far, far away. It was more like I was on Twitter for a second. And so the whole animal...
You'll never find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Twitter. Yeah, except maybe Facebook. But the animal rights thing, I'm all for animals, don't get me wrong. But anyway, that was all just like the whole Canto Bight. I'm pretty critical of that, save a few moments. And like I said, overall, I like Rose, but the moment when she interrupts Finn from sacrificing herself in that battering ram, I was actually disappointed. I love Finn, but I think that would have been an awesome way for him to go, personally. And it would have been another surprise. But in the kiss at the end, and like that was just really one of my least favorite. You know, second only to the breastfeeding scene, that was the most cringeworthy moment for me in the whole movie.
Can I just add something real quick? The other thing, nobody even responded to this because keep it brief. But Captain Phasma went out way too quick. She went out like a punk.
She's the new Boba Fett.
As far as Holdo, I think I'm saying that right. Holdo and Poe. I was just like, man, I wish she would have communicated her plan to him. I don't know why she didn't do that. He shouldn't have been an idiot, but I don't know. That was frustrating. Almost felt like a plot hole. But as far as Holdo, I liked that. I feel like we got introduced to a new character, and by the end of it, I really disliked her for the whole movie because I loved Poe, and so I just was made to dislike her. But my favorite moment in the whole movie is when she goes kamikaze on that First Order starship, and it just was like we've already said, that to me was not only a cool Star Wars moment, but like a timeless cinematic scene that I think people 100 years from now could see that and be like stunned, just like we were. Poe is, I'm confused by this now because I loved him in Force Awakens, and now he seems like a knucklehead. And that's a little confusing for me, but hopefully he'll bounce back and maybe he learns something in his foolishness. So
call the attack off when they're going towards the cannon. So I think that's the development that they were aiming for.
Yeah, right. He definitely gets
my contention
arc.
Is he didn't need.
Right.
I don't think he was at that knucklehead place at the end of Force Awakens.
Right.
Sorry, I keep saying the same thing, but yeah.
Whenever I feel like Poe's a knucklehead, I just run through how awesome he was in taking out the dreadnought, and then I remember that, you know, sometimes hopping in an X-Wing and blowing things up is the right way to do it.
So. Yeah. And one final thing, I didn't feel like we're made to think there's a little love triangle going on between Rose, Rey, and Finn. It's very subtle, but they're on the Falcon. Finn is putting a blanket on Rose.
Yeah, there's a look.
Rey is kind of looking over there like, oh, what's that about? And I'm like, I don't even want to go there. I don't care about that. That's a little harsh, but yeah, that's a little harsh, I guess. But yeah, I hope they don't spend too much time unraveling that in episode 9. But overall, loved it.
Yeah, so a few thoughts that I had on this. On the Poe Holdo plot line, I did like that they made Poe be very kind of reckless in the movie, because I think it's important that all real characters have a flaw of some kind. And I think that what we got in The Force Awakens was literally Poe is the best starfighter pilot in the galaxy. And that was just hammered in over and over again. He literally survives a TIE fighter crashing on Jakku, and apparently he's still fine and he's still the best. And like, he's just great. Like, literally every moment he is just winning. Like, all he does is win, no matter what. So,
but what's wrong with that?
so that's fun to watch. But realistically, like every character has a flaw of some kind. And so I think they decided that, hey, let's give Poe the flaw of being reckless, kind of like Luke in Empire Strikes Back, recklessly going to save his friends. Like, Poe is just, he's a really great starfighter pilot, but he also doesn't always think about everything that he does. So I think they tried to give him an arc there, and I think overall I liked it. I think, maybe he does a few too many dumb things, but ultimately it does work. And in the end, to see his restraint as they go up against the cannon, and then at the end when Leia says, don't look at me, follow him, as he's leading all of the rebels out of the cave. I really do respect Poe at the end of the movie. I don't feel like the character of Poe is ruined for me.
So no, not at all.
Overall, I did like his arc.
Great. I think he definitely ends at a high point. And like you guys have said, I'm looking forward to see him in the next one. Because potentially he's the leader of the rebels in a way.
Right.
If Rey is kind of pursuing, if Rey is pursuing kind of like a Jedi or more of like a knight role in the group, he's kind of potentially the leader, which I think is really cool.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then on the whole Finn, Rose, and Canto Bight, I think my thing with this is I think it should have been streamlined a lot. I agree with a lot of what's been said about, that the fathier, long-ear creatures are pretty unnecessary, and a lot of the casino stuff is unnecessary. I think the character of DJ is also pretty unnecessary. I think basically they were going for a couple of things. One piece I think that Ryan wanted was meeting the slaves, because he wanted to end the movie with, Broom Kid using the Force. And so he wanted to have that connection of having seen these kids who are obviously from nowhere and having one of them be Force sensitive. And so they wanted to set that up. I think a better way to streamline that might have been that they have to go get a code breaker or whatever, and then that code breaker like turns out that he's like a weapons manufacturer and he's using child labor or something like that, and so they meet the kids in direct connection to who they're looking for. And then they could have said, oh, we have to like get this guy's help, and then ultimately they decide that it's not worth working with this terrible person because of his morals or something. And so they fail in their mission because of their compassion. And I think that could have been a really cool way of doing it. But
instead,
would have been a
very strong. Yeah.
Yeah. Very strong emotionally. As it was very kind of all over the place. Let's go to the casino. Oops, we parked in the wrong place on the beach. Oops, we're in jail. Oops, we missed the real code breaker. Here's another code breaker. Wait, these animals need help. Oh, there are some kids. They're going to help us. Oh, the animals ran past our ship. Oh, well, here's the other code break. I mean, it's literally just one thing after another.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I think they definitely could have streamlined that and still gotten to the end game that they wanted.
Yeah, my question is, if you cut out the whole cantina or casino scene, what would the movie be missing? And I don't really know that there's an answer for that, except for, like you said, we've got to have someone random that we can show has force sensitivity or force ability. That, because they're random, they could have come from anywhere, so I don't even think that necessarily qualifies.
Right. Yeah, honestly, we could have shown kids on Jakku or something.
Jakku is the actual Jedi planet, we just didn't know it.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the other big things in this film is the theme of failure. And so you see how through all the plot lines, Ryan's trying to really have the heroes fail at what they're trying to do. Obviously, you know, Luke failed at training Kylo. You have Finn and Rose failing at their mission. You have, you know, Poe failing at everything. You have the rebellion getting blown to bits by the First Order, they're like not many left at the end of the movie. There's a lot of failure, and you have, you know, Yoda saying that big line, the best teacher failure is. Mm-hmm. And so I see how they're really trying to kind of weave that theme throughout the film. And I really respect that. I do think it could have been streamlined in some places, because it got a little out of hand.
That theme of failure, I think, makes for a really strong second movie in a trilogy, you know, from kind of a grand drama perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Yeah.
Does this movie rank in, like, the top two or three for you guys as far as Star Wars movies go?
For me, no.
It does for me. Empire Strikes Back is my favorite and probably will always be my favorite Star Wars movie. But this really ranks up very high. It might even be my second favorite. I really enjoyed this movie.
I think, I don't know about actual numerical rank, but I definitely, it's definitely up there. I think that if for no other reason than the sheer entertainment value of it, I think that it's definitely one of the tops, though definitely not in my top two, maybe not my top three, but definitely up there as far as the saga goes.
Yeah.
How about you, Cody?
Yeah, I think this list changes for me all the time. It almost feels futile to try to rank them, but it's fun to do anyway. And so I think it's two or three for me, with Empire being number one. I just really, for every nitpicky thing I had for it, I could point to 10 things that I was just blown away by. So
the highs in this movie were really high.
Yeah.
Like, the good moments were really good.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got to wrap this up pretty soon. I do want to go to one more place here to talk about The Last Jedi as it fits in with this new Star Wars trilogy. So we had The Force Awakens. We're talking about The Last Jedi. Then we've got Episode 9 coming, which J.J. Abrams is directing. How do you guys feel like this film worked as a follow-up to The Force Awakens? And what do you think is coming next? What are your hopes and fears for 9?
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I was going to say this as my sort of summative end statement, but I think it fits well now. For the first time since, you know, in my lifetime, I truly could not tell you what I think is going to happen in the next movie with any real degree of confidence.
Yeah.
I think that Johnson has turned the typical Star Wars experience on its head, and I think that anything that I feel like, oh, well, this will probably happen in 9, you know, this voice in the back of my head is like, well, everything you thought that was going to happen in 8 didn't happen, and I think that's a very exciting place to be, because even though, you know, like, as the prequels were coming out, you know, when I was a kid, even though I didn't know the details, I knew what the plot was going to be. You know, we knew what the end game was. And in this trilogy, we very much don't know that. I mean, I'm very curious to see if they decide to ultimately kill or redeem Kylo Ren. You know, I have no idea which way they're going to go with that, you know, and many other things. And that's really exciting, I think.
Yeah, Josh or Cody, what do you guys think? How did you feel like this film worked as a follow-up to The Force Awakens, and what are you thinking is next for Episode 9?
Cody, you want to go ahead?
Yeah, it's just such a tough question to answer, because much of what I already said, you know, we already said that I was just so surprised by this film. The Force Awakens, I wasn't surprised by it. I enjoyed it. I cheered several times in the theater, you know. And then we have this film that just totally, you know, ignored my expectations and did its own thing. And I was really pleased by that and shocked and almost speechless. You know, people ask me what I thought of the film in one word, and it's like, I can't even say good or bad, even though it was great. So it's just a tough one for me to answer. I personally think it was better than The Force Awakens. If we're just comparing, you know, one movie versus another, which one am I more likely to watch on a Saturday afternoon, you know? I'm going to watch The Last Jedi. And as far as the next movie goes, I have no idea what's going to happen. I can say that, obviously, I think some main characters are going to die, obviously. But beyond that, I really have no idea what to expect, and I'm really... I'm sorry for J.J. Abrams that he has to follow and act like that. I respect J.J. I think he's going to do a good job at the end of the day, but wow, what a task. I have no idea what to expect. I hope to see a Luke Force Ghost, though.
We deserve a Luke Force Ghost at this point.
See you around, Kira.
After all we've been through.
Jar Jar Binks Force Ghost.
Oh, no.
I'll say some negative things, Nate, and then hopefully you can bring it back to a positive note, because I don't want to be a Debbie Downer too much. But
I'll do my best.
So my overall criticism of the two new Star Wars movies is that, and you guys were actually saying that you didn't necessarily want this so much, but that I thought was interesting. But Star Wars, for me, as I've gotten older and kind of thought about it more and listened to people talk about it, has really developed from this is a cool movie with lightsabers to the first trilogy was a really interesting story about how, you know, the good guys overthrew an empire. Well, you also get the story of Luke kind of coming of age, which is a very timely story when those movies came out, especially for young men, I think, which is a lot of why it got such good traction, was due to kind of cultural finding of who people were. People trying to find themselves, really. And the prequel trilogy then kind of showed, like, how do we get to the point where the Empire was in control? Actually, you know, we had this great Republic, but the Republic fell. Here's why. And also, here's how Darth Vader became Darth Vader. These movies, I struggle to see, like, what are we getting from them other than here are lightsabers, here's the good guys, here's the bad guys. So from a really high-level perspective, I'm kind of left asking, what's the point of these movies? And I think the reason for that is that we don't get enough boring scenes. We don't get anything from like a Senate or anything like that saying like, hey, here's some problem that we have to try and fix. Everyone argues about it. They can't fix it. Turns out that problem gets worse and worse. And if only they could have fixed it, you know, we wouldn't have had to turn to such drastic military hero escapades to fix these, you know, overwhelming forces of evil taking over. So my big problem is don't really know enough about the First Order. We don't know where Snoke came from. So it's kind of like no matter how much the good guys do, even if they blow up Starkiller Base, we don't really know what we're up against. It's kind of like this vague, there's always a big bad guy feeling. So I'm left kind of not really sure, but also not sure that I can bear to put much emotional effort into the next movie in the sense that I have no idea what's going to happen, so why even bother almost, which I hate to say, and I didn't feel like that coming out of Force Awakens, but that's the negative feeling that I got, and it's kind of colored my perception of the whole movie, as I've seen it twice, is that the Star Wars films don't have an overarching... They definitely have themes, but they don't have an overarching story about, say, humanity or anything like that, at least that I've been able to see. So here's what could happen. If they really bring it together properly in episode 9, I'll be beyond impressed. And if they can kind of tie it together and say, hey, look, here's what we were showing you all along, you know, more kudos to them. But I'm a little unsure that I want to care too much about the next Star Wars movie because I feel like it might just be a lot of really cool scenes and interesting characters, but without much to say.
If I can tag on to that really quickly. Again, I loved episode 8, but my fear, which Josh, you sort of helped my brain to articulate better, my fear for episode 9, which has sort of been drummed up by the trilogy so far, is that I hope that what we are left with is not sort of this trilogy where the kind of overall story is millennial angst. Because
right.
I think that what we, like you said about, you know, the original trilogy coming out in the 80s and the prequel trilogy coming out in, you know, the early 2000s being tied to what's going on in the world at that time. You know, if we look at what we have right now, we have two factions, which are presumably, you know, like the two sides of the galaxy. We have the, you know, the First Order and the Resistance, which we only know what the Resistance stands for because of the original trilogy. We assume that the First Order is the Empire, but we don't know that. And
right.
both of these factions, with the exception of Leia, both of these factions are led by angsty, confused millennials who are in their 20s.
Right, and it's kind of a mess, and maybe that's part of the story, is like, when you don't know what you're doing, it doesn't go right.
Right, and I mean, even, like, if we're looking at the First Order, we now have Kylo Ren, who doesn't even know which way is up, is the supreme leader of the First Order.
Mm-hmm.
And General Hux doesn't really know much more. I mean, we are given multiple scenes in Episode 8 where General Hux is made a laughingstock of by, you know, either Resistance figures or his own men.
Mm-hmm.
And so the First Order is kind of in shambles as far as leadership. And then in the Resistance, we have, now that Luke is gone and Leia, we assume, can't be around for too much longer because of Carrie Fisher. But, you know, we have the Resistance led by Rey and Poe, who are equally young and brash. So I just hope that the story that we end up with is not just a story about how millennials don't need anyone older than them, and all of us 20-somethings can just solve the world's problems on our own.
Yeah, I agree with that a lot. That's something I hadn't quite picked up on, but now I'm even more scared.
Well, remember, we did have that great scene with Luke, so at least our old heroes brought us something.
Yes.
On the slightly current negative tone, I will say, I think Rian Johnson took such a complete about-face with this movie that he left some good things in the dust. I think that Rian felt like he was kind of saddled with all of this baggage from The Force Awakens that, oh, I have to continue all of these plot lines. And he basically shot-blocked all of them in one way or another.
Mm-hmm.
He kind of subverted expectations at every possible place. And a lot of things he just completely ignored. Obviously, he didn't tell us anything about Snoke, cut him in half. Rey's parents are nobody, so your theory doesn't matter. Luke's going to toss his lightsaber over his shoulder. We're not going to tell you anything about the Knights of Ren. You know, they were a thing, but we're not going to talk about them. There was like a map to Luke Skywalker, but it turns out Luke never wanted to be found. He wanted to go there to die. So there are all these kind of things that The Force Awakens builds up, and then The Last Jedi just literally subverts expectations or ignores plot lines on many levels. And so I think Star Wars needed this. I mean, this needed to happen in a way. Like, we needed to have a film that did this and took bold choices. But I think it could end up being harmful to the trilogy as a whole, because you had J.J. Abrams setting up his classic mystery box elements, and then Rian just did stuff with all of them, either ignored plot lines or destroyed them or whatever, such that by the end of The Last Jedi, everything has, like, blown up or happened, and we're kind of left with, like you guys are saying, like, where do we even go from here? Like, what else needs to happen at this point, besides kind of seeing what happens to these characters? So that is, I think, what The Last Jedi does. It blows everything up, and we don't know what's going to happen. And I do think, you know, it may suffer from the fact that besides Kathleen Kennedy, who's overseeing Star Wars as a whole, we really don't have a showrunner. We don't have anyone who's kind of taking this thing from start to finish. The directors aren't given direction when they start a new movie. So JJ is like writing whatever he wants now. We don't know what that's going to be. And it could be pretty much anything. He might pick up old threads from The Force Awakens, or he might stay with the kind of subverted direction of The Last Jedi. We really don't know. So I think we're left with kind of a blank slate, and I think when we look back on this trilogy, a lot is going to hang on what J.J. does with 9. He wrap it up well? Do we have a complete picture? Or does it feel disjointed? Like, well, we had a thing, but then we just went in the opposite direction, and then we tied up as many loose ends as we could. You know, what does it feel like looking back? I don't know. It's going to be very interesting.
And let us remember that maybe this is super unpopular to say, but the original trilogy, I mean, those are not perfect movies. I mean, The Empire is pretty close. That's an incredible film. But New Hope is good. But Return of the Jedi, I mean, there's a lot that we could talk. I mean, I don't know. That feels disjointed at times, too. And so I don't know. I feel like maybe there's so much pressure on these poor guys making these movies that we kind of deify the original trilogy when really I think that these movies could be a lot worse than they are. I think that's just an important caveat, and that what you said reminded me of that, Nate.
Well, it's very true. Yeah, it's true. And also to remember that George Lucas didn't know what was going to happen next when he made A New Hope. You know, he didn't know about all the familial relationships he was going to reveal between Empire and Return of the Jedi. All that was figured out later. So the fact that it all came together as well as it did is actually pretty impressive.
But yeah. he didn't throw it all out halfway through. So it's going to be to JJ's credit if he can, you know, bring it back to something really cohesive that has its kind of overarching story to tell.
Right. So one idea I will throw out there is if you look at one of the great movie trilogies that is good because it's based on a great book trilogy, which I know Josh Gaston loves, The Lord of the Rings. One cool thing that they did in the movies is they introduced the character of Gollum in The Two Towers. But then at the beginning of Return of the King, they gave you this great flashback to how he became who he was.
Oh.
And so my thought for episode 9 would be to start with a significant flashback that really deals with what Kylo and the Knights of Ren went through and how that affected them. And of course, Luke is there in the prologue as well. And so ultimately, a flashback like that at the beginning of 9 would help us to better sympathize with Luke's character in The Last Jedi and see how he got where he got. And it would also give more depth to Kylo Ren, and it would give us more fleshed out villains in the Knights of Ren that they could then bring in as villains in episode 9, since right now we have limited villains that we can put a face to.
Yeah,
so that's my thought for episode 9.
We have a bit of a precedent for a mechanic for that too, with the way that Rey and Ben or Kylo kind of communed with the Force. Potentially Rey could find that memory in him. I mean, that could be pretty interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. Because that's the thing. So much supposedly happened between Jedi and Force Awakens, and we didn't see a lot of it. So if we could see a little bit more of it, I think that would go a long way.
Mm, I agree. Could I pose you guys a question?
Yeah.
Do you think that Kylo Ren will be turned before the end of the trilogy?
If Carrie Fisher were still alive, and from what I've heard, she was supposed to play an important role in the final installment, I think that could have been an awesome redemption scene. It has to be done really, obviously, that'd be difficult to do, but I would have loved to have seen that and almost maybe would have expected it, but I don't know if I see that happening now. I mean, Star Wars is really a story of redemption in a lot of ways, but I don't know, man. This new movie defied all my expectations, so I don't think they care. I think they're going to do whatever they want, so I don't expect it. It could happen, but
what could be really interesting is if actually Rey turns to the dark side at the end of the third movie, and that sets up kind of like a now you really don't know what's happening.
That's not going to happen.
No, it wouldn't, but from a perspective of like what can they do now to carry on with what they have, which isn't much, that would be carrying on the tradition of, bet you didn't see this coming.
Surely.
I think we'll see some redemption in Kylo. I think a lot of the film will focus on Rey trying to help him out and trying to bring him back to be a good person. And I think that there's definitely going to be struggle in him. And I think there's going to be a kind of redemption, but I think they're going to do their best not to have it look like Vader's redemption, because they already kind of did that in The Last Jedi.
But didn't Kylo resolve to, like, wasn't that what that moment with Snoke was about? Like, Snoke sensed this resolve in him that there was no longer conflict. And, of course, he ended up killing him. But didn't Kylo resolve in that moment to, like, go full-fledged to the dark side? That's how I read that moment. So I don't know if there's still light in him. You know, they Rey and Ren have that connection right before she steps on the Millennium Falcon at the end, and she kind of just turns her back on him.
She slams the door on him.
Yeah, like total Godfather move. I just don't know. I think there's resolve in him, so I don't know.
Well, my theory for episode 9 is, and I don't know if I like this, but it's what, if I had to, you know, if I was a gambling man and this is what I think, you know, I'm going to put my money on, I think that what we are going to see is a continuation of the theme that the Jedi must end and let the past die, etc. And I think that what we're going to get in the end of episode 9 is we're going to get Kylo Ren as not a horrible person, but also not a good person, who is somewhere in the middle and has built some sort of amicable relationship with Rey. And I think Rey will end up as a similar figure, but on the other end of the token. And I think that what we're going to end up seeing is Kylo Ren as a nuanced and mature leader of the First Order, and Rey as a leader in her own right. And I think that what we're going to be left with is not this dichotomy of light and dark, but two different individuals who are on a continuum between, you know, complete darkness and complete light, sort of leading their, you know, going down their paths in the galaxy. And I but that's what we're going to get. And I think that that's what the trilogy has been leading to personally, which is this idea of there is no just, there's not just pure light and pure dark. Everything is a balance. And there is no more Jedi and Sith, you know, so that's sort of where I see it going.
Yeah, I'm sure it'll be unresolved in some way. There'll be something that's left open. So this has been great, guys. Thanks for joining in on this podcast about The Last Jedi. And we've talked for almost the length of the movie. Just kidding, not that long. It was the longest Star Wars movie, so yeah. But thanks so much for joining in. To our listeners, thanks for listening to this very long and very special episode. And check out more on forefrontfestival.com. You can listen to more podcasts, read more blog entries, and leave us a comment there. And until next time, may the Force be with you.